You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
20 years ago, the Exxon Valdez dumped millions of liters of oil in Prince William Sound. It was an accident that not only damaged the environment, it also changed forever the lives of the inhabitants of that area. Economic fears, environmental blight, and deteriorating personal relationships afflicted local people. Ricky Ott is a resident of Cordova, one of the affected areas. She is also the author of Not One Drop, Betrayal and Courage in the Wake of the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill. Earlier this week, Red Eye Collective member Sean Mullen spoke with Ricky Ott. He began by asking her how and why personal relationships began to erode directly after the oil spill.
For a couple reasons. One was everybody was severely traumatized by this. You have to understand that our community is a coastal fishing village, and also it's a native community. So we're very connected to the environment. And there's a understanding that Prince William Sound is healthy, we're healthy. And we woke up on the morning of March 24th, and the natives called it the day the water died. I mean, never in the millennium of our people have we thought it possible for the water to die, but it is true. So there was the initial shock. Then our fish runs, our fisheries were closed. A large part of them were closed in 1989. Unfortunately, the killing did not stop in 1989. There were delayed collapses of our primary fish runs, our pink salmon and our herring, 3 and 4 years after the spill. And this was because the young of the year in 89 and the fish that were juveniles just simply didn't survive or encountered a bunch of problems like reproductive problems, immune suppression. They just weren't healthy. So we had this delayed, impact 3 and 4 years later. The herring has not recovered at all. The pink salmon have, but it took a number of years, 95, 96, 97, somewhere in there. And unfortunately, the financial trauma from all this created a large part of the individual dysfunction, the family dysfunction, the community dysfunction. Our communities basically frayed and fell apart. And we had to learn how to work together again to get healed so that we could make decisions about where, how we wanted to address these problems and how we wanted to move forward.
You mentioned the community frayed. Can you get into a little more detail exactly what were some of the consequences of that?
Sure. It was actually pretty bad, really. This financial trauma is the leading cause, as I mentioned, for all this dysfunction. And when a person isn't able to pay their debts and they're seeing their homes foreclosed, and they take actions that they normally wouldn't. So what we saw in all the oil communities initially were these spikes in suicides, divorces, domestic violence, substance abuse. Consequently, other areas recovered, but because we had our fish losses still that continue to haunt us, we never, really got over that. The stress remained very high for 25% of the population, those directly involved with fishing and with the native people. So we, after the 1993 fish runs collapse of both herring and salmon, the community actually took a collective act of civil disobedience, actually. We blockaded Valdez Narrows and held up tanker traffic. We were demanding ecosystem studies. We were demanding that the scientists get out of the lab, get into the field, please figure out what is making the sound collapse like this. And we came back from that all empowered and fired up. It's like that act triggered us from the victim mode into the survivor mode. And after that, we started forming little working groups of people to focus on specifically on issues that you were passionate about. So some people took on the sobriety celebration with the Native people. Some people took on the emotional trauma and suicides and divorces. Some people, like me, I took on community activism in terms of economic activists. How could we rebuild our economy in ways that were compatible with commercial fishing and with our culture and our lifestyle? So the act of working together for the common good is actually a very healing thing. The sociologists who studied our community and studied what broke and how we fixed it actually validated that these small working groups, whether they're called peer listening circles or ultimately new nonprofit organizations, these were really what had to be done to repair relationships, rebuild trust, and ultimately heal community.
The spill, of course, significantly damaged the fishing industry. How did people cope with that?
Well, our permits, our limited entry fishing permits, devalued radically. I mean, they went from $300,000 down to around $12,000 to $15,000. Those fishermen that could not find other work in town, hold down multiple jobs, simply were forced to relocate. I mean, it was bad. We lost probably about a third of our fishing fleet. And this is families. These are families that had to pack up and leave. They were replaced by new people coming in and some buying the permits at the lower level, at the, you know, at the collapsed value. What we have is we have these fishermen who were the victims of the spill that are now owing debt on permits where the debt exceeds the value of the permit. And this is the definition of a depression, when you have debt that exceeds the value of the assets. And then we have the new fishermen who came in at these lower prices that are fishing. We also concentrated on the Copper River fishery, which is an unoiled fishery, and we did niche marketing, and that fishery now accounts for half of the income of the harvest. So we built that up. We had to get very creative to make ends meet.
At the same time, your community was involved in high-stakes litigation, is that correct?
Oh, yes. The litigation went on for almost 20 years. It's just now paying out, and that, it turns out, also contributed a second helping of post-traumatic stress disorder, and that contributed to the stress and the dysfunctional community. This is according to the sociology study. They pretty much confirmed that the way we do litigation in the United States, it's adversarial, it's divisive, it pulls people apart, and there is no process where you have to give your power away to the attorney to take to court. So it's a very disempowering process, and it's very harmful. So I started looking at what other ways could we do restoration, to do restorative justice, retributive justice.
We've been talking about the tensions in the town of Cordova where you lived. Some of those tensions were fostered, you indicate in the book, by Exxon, Exxon itself. How did they do that?
Exxon, after the oil spill, it realized that Cordova was a very powerful community and that people were agitated and upset and talking to the media. So Exxon came swooping in with boat charter contracts to get people out working on the spill. And the early contracts all had clauses that people could not take press out, that people would not talk to press, that people could not take cameras out onto the out into the Prince William Sound. So there was a pretty clear understanding in town that this was hush money, as well as cleanup money. Then the people who were actually out cleaning up came back with stories of how inefficient, the cleanup was, that it was just sort of a joke. I mean, people would treat a beach, the tide would come in, it would just plaster the beach with oil all over again, but Exxon would count it as a treated beach and move on to another area. So the town realized pretty quickly that this money, you know, it was very divisive. It split families. They had to make a decision if you wanted to go out, if you didn't want to go out. And part of the decision was driven by fear that there was no fishery, there was no income, so this might be the only income in town. So it was a very personal decision, but it was also very divisive. We call that money the money spill, and we call it blood money still to this day. And one of our Native fellows carved a shame pole on the 18-year anniversary, and he painted the dollar signs in the oil spill with his own blood. I mean, 18 years later, the hostility and the, you know, the feelings of frustration over that spill money were still very evident.
And you've mentioned already civil disobedience as one way in which the community came together. How else did the community recover itself?
The civil disobedience was, I think, more of a triggering point than anything else. It triggered us from being victims into survivors, and you really need that trigger. And I think that civil disobedience, you know, should be like one of the last things, but... the main thing that we started to do was form these listening circles. There were focus groups that were focused on the different problems that we were having. We were having lack of trust of the government and the oil industry, so we formed a group that helped advise the oil tankers, traffic, the government, the scientists. We formed a group to deal with the financial trauma, and we helped diversify our economy. There were two different groups that helped with dealing with the emotional trauma. A Native project, Sobriety Celebration, and then an actual family resource center. So what the people did was they came into these small groups and just said, I want to work on this, I want to work on this, or this. And by working together for the common good, that is actually documented by the sociologists as reducing stress and shifting people out of the trauma and into recovery.
And what does the future hold for Prince William Sound and the town of Cordova?
We say that we will recover when the herring recover. And right now, we have no idea when that's going to be. The scientists are saying that the herring are in a predator pit, which means that they have, the population has, since the spill collapsed, and it is now at or below the threshold needed to sustain the rest of the ecosystem in Prince William Sound. So every year when the herring reproduce, it's combed off by whales, by sea lions, by birds. And they really can't rebuild to their former population. And, I mean, what's a fisherman without fish? So we're, I think we'll see a very, I hope we'll see a continued and very slow recovery.
That interview was done by Red Eye Collective member Sean Mullen, and he was speaking with Ricky Ott earlier this week. Her new book, Not One Drop, is available from Chelsea Green Publishing.